they are still looking at us as a commodity. So it's not, oh, you can't be your real self. It's, we now have characters and we want you to fit into this character. So you are either the diva, the sassy, the bully, or you're the best friend who gives
great advice.
Or you are this completely over-sexualized, fetishized black woman, okay? Oh, you're exotic and all that kind of stuff. They have narratives.
Hi, I'm Anissa.
I'm Luanda.
Hi, I'm Linda E.
And I'm Sophie. And welcome to the second episode of Ethnically Speaking. We are four fabulously smart, curious, and opinionated women of colour who are here representing the UK. And we're going to be talking about everything and anything that affects our communities, whether that's current affairs, pop culture, or everything in between. And nothing is off limits. We are going to keep it real with you 100% of the time. So forget tiptoeing around topics and technically speaking, because today we're ethnically speaking. Now, if you didn't catch our very first episode, which happened last week, you missed out. But don't worry, you can still catch the episode. We were talking about Black Lives Matter and just everything surrounding that. It was an entire mood. So don't forget to catch that on our YouTube channel, on Instagram. But do that after today, because we have a lot to bring to you in episode number two. And kicking it off is going to be Anissa. What's topic number one, girl?
So, lockdown in London is easing, as we know. I don't know if you guys have been out there yet, but I went out there yesterday for a little bit of a walk just to see what was going on now that all the non-essential stores have been able to reopen. And the streets were very busy when I was out there. There was queues, there was like there were so many people. I was actually like shocked that there was that many people there. But what shocked me more was the lines outside of some of these shops, and one store in particular was Primark. Like, I heard that, like, across the country, there were hundreds of people queuing outside of locations, even sleeping there overnight. To me, that's a little bit outrageous. I know Brits like a bargain, but what do you think the obsession is? Like, why are we obsessed with Primark?
I just think it speaks a lot to the consumerism in our society. Yep. That people were camping out, guys. Out to go to Primark.
Do you think it has, so you know you're talking about this idea of consumerism, do you think it has anything to do with like Boris Johnson talking about, you know, we need to shop to save our economy? Do you think people felt a duty to kind of go out, or do you think it was strictly, I just want to buy some cheap stuff?
I don't think it had anything to do with that. The only thing I'm going to say is, playing devil's advocate, is the fact that lockdown has definitely had detrimental effects on people's mental health. So the only thing I'm going to say is, as much as I'm here being like, they're going to Primark, they're camping for Primark, I wouldn't do it. But who am I to stop someone from doing something that brings them some kind of joy in some capacity? Because you know what? I know loads of people who have actually really been going through it by being forced to be at home, not being able to work, not being able to go out and have, you know, basic freedoms. So if for someone going to Primark and camping out there has brought some sense of joy that I can't bring to them, you know what? Enjoy it, isn't it? Because at the same time, believe it or not, they are helping our economy, and the workers of Primark who have been furloughed are hopefully now back on, you know, their full wage, because there's been so much excitement and so much desire for people to be back in the stores.
Is there any store that you would camp outside? Is there anything that you would camp out overnight for?
Me, a homie.
Hey, I was going to ask you guys the same question.
Yeah,
have you guys ever even waited in line more than 3 hours to get into a store that sells clothes?
Where?
That sells clothes, like anything. Like, would you camp outside of a store?
Babes, I wouldn't even camp for Beyonce's concert about I'm camping for Primark. Come on, girl. I love Queen B, though, please. I love Queen B. Even though I said I wouldn't camp for Queen B, yeah? Let me tell you what I did for Beyonce's tickets. So I don't know if you guys remember when Beyonce came over with a Mrs. Carter World Tour.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what I did, because I'm a general of the Beehive. So,
general.
Okay. So, I gave my friend £200, right? Okay. Because she was O2, and they released O2 priority tickets on, I believe it was the Wednesday, right? So, I gave my friend £200 to buy me tickets. The day came, tickets sold out. I said, that's fine, babe. I went and bought an O2 SIM card the next day. Yes, told my friends to keep trying, and I will keep trying. We didn't get tickets. Friday, I logged into Beyonce's website because, you know, you get exclusive if you're a Beehive member. I was at work, yeah? And I said to my my line manager, just so you know, at 11 o'clock, I'm not going to be doing anything work-related. I'm on Beyonce's website.
Yeah.
Please believe, no tickets, yeah? So do you know what I did on Saturday? Yep, Saturday was general release. I logged in on my laptop, on my house computer, on my brother's laptop, on my mobile phone, yeah. My friend still had my money, yeah. Just to get Beyonce ticket.
Please tell me you went to this concert. Linda, please tell me you went to the concert.
I went, thank God.
Goodness gracious me.
That is insane. I'm not, but you know what? I like the persistence there. Shows determination. Well done, Linda.
Bring all the way back to Primark, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, something that made me really think differently about it was I saw this Instagram post by a woman called Asia Barber. I don't know if you've seen her. She's like a writer and a fashion consultant. And she was started talking about this idea, you know, it's not our job to rebuild an economy built on exploitation. Because she was saying, like, Primark doesn't even treat its workers good. With Primark being open, it means that its factories in developing countries have to be open where people can't actually be social distancing, but we're trying to clap for people who come into the store.
You're talking too loud, sis. That was a bit too loud, sis.
I thought it was a really interesting comment because there was this thing on medium.com on this website and he was saying they're trying to reduce us to consumers when we need to be trying to be citizens. Like,
Instead
of just throwing our money down Primark or any other shop like that, any shop, Zara, whatever, why don't we think about how we can be helping people with our money? Why aren't we trying to look at small businesses who need the money? Because they're like, Primark doesn't actually need the money. They're getting huge bailouts, where it's our local shop on the high road on our local area, which is the one that's going to be in real financial worries. So I don't know. What do you think about that, guys?
I don't think anything will make people stop shopping at Primark, even like when we start to think about the employees and stuff, because I don't know if you guys remember a couple of years ago, Primark got caught up in that whole modern slavery thing. And that was a big whistleblowing topic and people found out what was going on in their factories. And it did not stop anybody from going in and shopping at Primark. And so like what you're saying, Sophie, I think it's more about helping the people now. But in the same time, I guess Primark being open helps the people that work there, even if they're not being treated well, it's still kind of money. It's almost like a catch-22. I don't know how you could almost win in it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult because when you see, like, was it the Bangladeshi sweatshops? They don't say it's that. I'm calling it. It's my opinion. These sweatshops where people are working, they're getting low to minimum wage. If not even getting that. They're not even getting a living wage.
They don't get breaks.
I need to get underwear. I'm just like, Primark is not the only place you can get underwear from.
But you know what? This idea of consumerism is so ingrained in our everyday society. Like that honestly, like Anissa said, it's going to be very difficult because if it's not Primark, it'll be someone else. Let's not start talking about our high-end designers and how they really be treating people. Do you know what I mean? So where do we win? Because when you think about it, it is our local shops that are going to be the ones who need financial assistance but aren't going to get them. But unfortunately, the masses aren't going to think of that, you know, and consumerism is a mass problem. So I don't really know. All I know is that you will not be catching me queue for any shop.
I feel like we feel like coronavirus is over because I'm just like, I swear the R rate isn't down yet.
It is not.
Yeah.
They dropped it from level 3.
Yeah, well, on level 3 or something, or alert.
Yeah, it was 4. Then they dropped it to 3, I think.
But I've seen people out in bars and clubs, no social distancing. And I'm
clubs?
Yes. And I was shocked.
Yeah, what?
Yes. And I was like, you lot must want to compete at Fear Factor because I don't understand. We're taking such risks. Hundreds of people are still dying each day and people are just living. So I'm so sorry. I'm still concerned about the pandemic. So I would not be in no line to go to Primark. It's just.
It wasn't just Primark. Did you not see Nike Town?
No.
Where are you wearing those trainers to anyway? Because.
What is open to stunt at? There is no place to stunt at.
Oh, not open, Sophie. That's where they're going to stunt.
Yeah, I agree. So from shopping at Primark to shopping for food, the government recently reversed their decision to only have their free school meal vouchers within term time after the football player Marcus Rashford did an open letter to Boris Johnson pleading him to hashtag make the U-turn. And then they did. So now the school vouchers, the school food vouchers are going to be available to low-income families throughout the summer term. So even though the conversation is about talking, you know, feeding hungry children, somehow some people are still finding a way to disagree with this. I wanted to ask you guys what you think. Should the state and the taxpayers be responsible for paying for poor children's food in summer holidays? What do you think about that, Sophie?
I think that if you're going to have children, I think that there is a responsibility for you to be able to provide for those children. I think that if you already know that you're really struggling and things are really tight, I don't think that's a situation that you should actively be trying to bring children into. I think for me that, yeah, I think you need to be responsible. But let me just say before I get crucified and cancelled, sometimes people do those stuff, but then life takes a dramatic turn. There's people who suddenly have an illness and can't work. There's people now who are getting made redundant and furloughed. It doesn't mean that they didn't think about their children 5-10 years ago. For me, I think there needs to be thought, but once the child is here, I think there's a social responsibility for that child to be looked after. However a child comes into the world, I wasn't planned, like neither was my sister. Do you know what I mean? Things happen. But so once the child is here, I think that the state does have responsibility, because I think a community is based on how they treat the most in need people. Like how you treat the people who need help the most, that is what really says something about your society. And if we're saying that children have no right to eat, then I think there's a problem there.
I agree. I think it's true. A society, a country is only as strong as what would be deemed as their weakest members of that community, of that society. So children, I think it's definitely the state's right. If we are going to be wasting money on numerous stuff that I can't even think to give you an example right
royal
now.
Royal weddings.
Come on. We're out here wasting taxpayers' pounds. But when it comes to children, there's an argument. Now, one thing I do hate, I hate the idea that people keep saying, oh, but don't bring children into this world if you can't. Do you know what? That is, I'm sorry, don't get twisted. I don't have any children, okay? And that's for a plethora of reasons. But I just think the idea of, oh, don't bring a child into this world if you're not ready to, not, it's like an over-presumption. We are presuming that the majority or a lot of these people are doing that. When people aren't, I think the people that bring children into the world intentionally knowing that they don't have the money is actually a minimum. I don't think it's the majority. And we are living in a society where, unfortunately, as much as we think, oh, people are poor in Africa, people are poor in Asia, people are poor in the UK. There is a lot of poverty in the UK. So yes, it is the state's duty to be able, and I'm actually surprised that this wasn't being done before now. If you are giving children vouchers during term time, why is it that you magically think that these families can now afford to feed them out of term time? So why wasn't it being done before? So no, Marcus, good on you. And I'm glad the government made a U-turn.
Agreed. I mean, to be honest, it genuinely saddens me to see people so passionately against giving food to low-income families, you know? And I think if you look at, there was a tweet by, you know, everyone's least favorite television personality who no longer has a Twitter account.
Whoop!
Good day for the internet. When you look at the replies to the tweet that she said, most of the people who were agreeing with her kind of had a, you know, like a pro England in their biography or something like that. And the England that they're being pro for is not an England that looks like us. Okay. So my gut tells me that most of the people who are reacting negatively to this have racially charged reasons for doing so. And the reason why I say that is because it is very rare for rich black people in the UK to be born rich. Mm-hmm. It is very rare for rich black people to not be famous. Mm-hmm. It's rare for rich black people to it's rare for poor black people to get rich in other ways that are sports and entertainment, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. like the brown and black population in the UK is something like 13%, but the majority of the poverty population is us. So I think it's the type of children they're thinking yes. that their money is going towards, right? And just as an example, so I don't know if you guys knew already, but in 1969 and 1970, the Black Panther Party started a free breakfast school club, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
at the height of this program, they were feeding thousands of children in about 45 different places. And the head of the FBI at the time said that in light of all of the things that the Black Panther Party was doing, the free breakfast school program for those kids was the greatest threat that they did. The greatest threat. That's what the head of the FBI said in 1969 and 1970. And so the FBI at the time were doing things like beating up the Black Panther Party that was serving the children food in front of the kids. They were taking pictures of the children and keeping them on file to intimidate them. And the night before the Chicago branch of the program was going to open, the FBI actually went into the center, destroyed the food, and then urinated on it. Okay? So the teachers, the reports that from the teachers, from the kids that were attending these programs that were getting free breakfasts, the teachers told the Black Panther parties that these kids were now paying attention in class. They were no longer crying from hunger pain, and they were no longer falling asleep in class. So we know the potential that an unstarved mind has. And yes. there are certain groups of people that don't want to see black and brown minds reach that potential.
Okay. Okay. The first thing I need to say is I've got to take it back on the sense, like, in London, yes, I think there is a very high rate of black and brown people in poverty, but that's not necessarily the case within the whole of the United Kingdom. You look at other places, like places in Manchester, places in Liverpool, places in Glasgow, the high population of people who are living below the poverty line or at the poverty line are white. So I think it would be incorrect for us to say that it's only black and brown children who are at risk. They are at risk, but there is also a population who are white. Like, I think for me, it's not even necessarily just linked to race. I think there are some people who have absolutely no idea what it's like to be poor. And that isn't dependent on just one specific race, because something that Boris Johnson said was that, oh, he understands about his families. I'm like, how do you understand? Like, you don't understand. And if you did understand, you wouldn't say it's okay for families to children to go without meals and for parents to have to go without meals and parents to have to decide whether, because Marcus Rashford said people saying they're having to pick between paying their electricity or feeding their children. Damn. Nobody should be in that thing. But there are a lot of black people who are not in the entertainment industry and are still doing well for themselves. Like, I don't think it's the highest proportion. I think it's the highest proportion that we're aware of. But I know lots of black and brown people who are senior accountants, senior marketing, senior this, senior that. They are around. But yeah, I think we need to be very, very mindful of that. And I think one of the things that you said, which I think is so key, Lwanda, is that tackling poverty doesn't just fill children. It brings down crime. It yep. brings up education. It yep. has so many other things that are linked to it. And I feel that when we're talking about, we want to tackle street violence or this, I'm like, so it starts by investing in children and making sure that they're fed enough to be able to attend school and mm-hmm. all these other mm. different things. And I think it's so small-minded. So I'm very glad that he made the U-turn.
I agree with Sophie, just to put on that point of, I don't think it's a race thing. I think it's more of a class issue, just because when I went to university, which was outside of London, I'm a London girl, but I decided to take on a small city. Anyway, went to university and I didn't realize at the time that this city that I had gone to was one of the poorest cities in the UK. And actually city. The year before I got there, it was declared the poorest city in the UK.
What city, babe?
I don't really want to get into it. I can
guess. I think I know what city it is.
A BBC documentary was even made about it being so poor and they played it in one of my lectures. And I was like, anyway, right?
it's so poor that they had like the highest amount of food banks in that city. So I don't know if you guys know what food banks are, but a place where people can go and get free food. It's a lot of tinned goods and things like that. And it wasn't like children that were going. It was lots of adults that were going for the food bank. And when I was in there and sitting around, I kept asking my lecturer, because I did sociology, I was like, where is the government? Like, does no one understand what's going on here? There's serious issues here. And they're like, oh, you know, the government, they're more concentrated in like London, different things. Us who are further out, like with our local MPs, there's not much of a focus, there's not much of a budget. And like, honestly, I kid you guys not, every couple of weeks you'd hear a story about people that were either committed suicide or killing themselves because they could not eat. And when I'd like come out of my lecture halls and things like that, there were so many people begging for money. There were so many people at the supermarket, standing at the supermarkets, literally begging. Everyone was like disheveled. And I was really shaken up by it because I've seen homelessness and poverty in London, but I hadn't seen it to this extent. And I was just exhausted by it because all these people that were coming up to me and I saw, they weren't black and brown, they were white. And I know that's even crazy to say, but I was kind of shocked, like, wow, they're doing the white people like this? Like, this is crazy. Like, I was like, this is crazy to me.
And I'm doing Jill like that?
I'm like, this government doesn't particularly care about people. It's like, if you're poor, fend for yourself. So I'm not surprised that with the children, they were kind of like, no, girl, fend for yourself. But it's, as the saying goes, like, it takes a village to raise a child. We're all one community together. So I think it's important that we have these vouchers. Not only vouchers, I've always thought, why don't we have free summer schemes? You know that people can't afford childcare. Yep. And we know that, I don't have kids, but when I look into the summer schemes for my nieces and nephew, it's like £100 a week per child. And it's like, which household can now afford this? And so I feel like the government should do more and step in for those deprived families. So, and then as Sophie said, it's gonna have an effect on crime, on education, on even the economy. But they don't want to do it. So, sorry, I thought that was a rant, but they don't want to do it.
No, it
was a good point because I was reading the child poverty facts and figures and it was saying, I think it's taught reframing the way that we see people in poverty because it said a lot of people who are living in poverty, which is like 4.2 million children, their parents have a job. One parent has a job and the point is they're at minimum wage and they're not making enough to live. And it's a society thing because it's just like, how can you have a job but you're still not able to make enough money to live? Like, you need to have a living wage. And that's why people are trying to bring in, yes, there's minimum wage, but what about the living wage? Because there's a complete difference between the two. Everything goes up in price, but then when your wage doesn't go up, how do you meet the shortfall when your travel goes up every year?
100%. There's also still, I just want to say that there's also like still hope for good people who want to help because, you know, even when it looked like the government wasn't going to make the U-turn, did you guys read that co-op back to Marcus? Yeah. And they were like, okay, well, we can give kids food vouchers just from co-op. And they were going to feed about 6,000 kids when it looked like they weren't going to go back on, you know what I mean, making the U-turn and making the good decision to keep it in the summer as well. They were like, okay, well, this is how we can help, you know, as a company. And I feel like people should have the perspective that even if you feel like you have a small amount, you can still help someone. Because I think in the letter, Marcus was talking about how him and his mother relied on the good deeds of people. It wasn't the good deeds of institutions. Yeah. It was just individuals that did this here and there. And they really helped overall. If you look at the grand scheme of things, they really helped his life overall. So it might feel like, okay, I can't do much, but everyone can do something.
Thing is, I think, is it Tesco? It's either Tesco, Asda or Iceland who have this little thing where they have bits of fruit that kids can pick up in store. I'm pretty sure it might even be Sainsbury's, and it's just bits of fruit that kids can pick up in store and just eat, and it's free of charge. And even that, when you think about it, as small as of a thing as it is, that does make a difference. So I think you're right. Unfortunately, these institutions have agendas that aren't always, you know, beneficial for the small people, for the impoverished people. So I think it really is, you know, as you say, it takes a community to raise a child. So it's just such a good thing that Marcus stood up and was so, you know, adamant about it, you know, and the fact that he had the experience of too, it just made the whole thing feel so real. And just, I think honestly, I think he helped without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing that makes me sad is that it had to take somebody using their celebrity, like the Voice.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying.
100,000 children go without a meal in the UK every day, like, or school children. That wasn't enough. Like,
it had to take
a celebrity footballer who was going to get more celebrities, and then you're thinking, oh, well, there's going to be a debate in the Commons about it, and you don't want other Tories to be disagreeing, and it's going to affect the party, so we'll just give the 120 million. And it just makes me really, really sad, but it shows what power we have when we come together on real issues.
Yeah, exactly. I just think that a society shouldn't be afraid of taking care of its most vulnerable members. Like, we should be taking care of the elderly. We should be taking care of people who have a disability. And we should be taking care of children from low-income families that can't otherwise feed themselves. Like, it's upsetting that it's even such a debate to me, you know?
Especially in a country where we're not short of food. That's the
thing.
We have more than enough food. There's so much food wasted every year. I'm like, the problem is not a lack of food. It's the fact that we don't want to make it accessible to people.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
This is it. But guys, before we head on to our next topic, I need to remind you guys, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Make sure you are following us on all social media platforms to keep up to date with our episodes, with our content, with everything that is Ethnically Sibican. Now, ladies, I'm glad we highlighted what Marcus has done. And I know we mentioned it briefly, and the idea that poverty isn't necessarily a race thing. Mm. So let me hit you up on this. I want to talk to you about racial inequality when it comes to earnings and finance, and the fact that Black households make less than their white counterparts when it comes to property, wealth, you name it. And not only is that a historical fact and the data shows it, but in the last 20 years, that gap seems to be increasing. Why do you think that is? I'm going to throw this at Luanda.
I think that this goes back to, again, systematic racism, because there is racism even in salaries, even in your salary earnings, right? So you can be a Black man who has the same qualifications and is in the same exact job as your white colleagues, and you could be earning up to 19% less than them, right? And that's only men. Like, we haven't even got on the topic of, you know, gender equality, pay and all that stuff. and that's speaking if you get the job, because even when you're handing out your CVs, you are actually 70% more likely to get called into an interview if you have a white British sounding name than if you have an ethnic sounding name. So that's even if you are able to make it into the job. And then once you get the job, it's about if you can keep it, being in that environment as probably one of the only Black employees there, you know, because as a Black employee, you are held accountable for other Black employees' actions, even if you don't know them, even if you're not friends with them. I mean, just to speak to that, there was a company that I worked for and it had branches in different areas. One of my friends worked in another area and she saw an email from the head of the company to that particular department saying, don't hire any more Black people. Don't hire any more Black people. They're lazy. That's a true story. That's a true story.
Oh my gosh.
So there's even that kind of issue of, you know, having those kind of stereotypes play out negatively in your life. And it's really frustrating. And I think possibly one of the solutions for that could be to be transparent in your income. If you are working in the same sector as another person, we should be all earning the same thing. If we're all doing the same job with the same qualifications to the same standard, we should be earning the same thing, and it should be open. We should all know what everyone else is earning. Like, I don't know if you guys remember the Sony email leaks. Do you guys remember that? Which was in... Yeah. So in...
Right.
I think it was about 2015, I think, when Sony's emails got hacked and a couple of them were leaked. And all of these big named top earning celebrities realized that they weren't getting paid as much as their male counterparts. Okay. Yeah. So I'm talking about like Jennifer Lawrence versus Bradley Cooper, she's getting paid less. Mm-hmm. Charlize Theron did a film called The Huntsman, which, you know, the Snow White sequel with Chris Hemsworth. And she was the main character in that film. I don't care what anyone says. She was then able to negotiate a $10 million pay rise because she realized that she was getting paid less than Chris. And there's, you can't fight for what you don't know that you have, you know? 100%. So that's why I said transparency, just to start with, would be a good start, I think. And then also on top of that, you know, we could sprinkle in some positive discrimination in there as well. just a little bit. because like I said about the names, like not even getting to interviews, like there was a lot of things working against us as black and brown employees in the UK. Although there was a case of a police force who were trying to hire a new constable, and there was a white male who went for the job and did not get the job because the person who was hiring was trying to practice positive discrimination, and they wanted to increase their female officers, their LGBT plus officers, their black and brown officers, their officers with disabilities. They openly said, this is what we want to increase within our force. Mm-hmm. That man was so butthurt over not getting that one thing that he filed a discrimination case, and he won that case.
What?
Despite the fact he won the case.
Wait, he didn't win.
I know. Despite the fact that the world is your oyster, despite the fact that people from marginalized communities are disenfranchised every single day of our lives, and when we try to talk about it, we're made fun of, we're gaslighted, we're told to pull ourselves up by bootstraps that don't exist. So it really speaks to how... You can live in the same world, but live in two different lives, right? Because with us, I don't want to speak for everyone, but me personally, I am more used to discrimination than I am to being treated equally. And that man is so used to, you know, having all doors open and walking through them. Yeah, exactly. That you felt so entitled to that job, like not even thinking about, okay, maybe if a person from a marginalized community has the exact same qualifications than me and is going to do the job just as good, maybe we should look at trying to like even the scales a little bit, you know?
I understand what you're saying, but I think in that example that you gave, if the person, like what that hiring person did from HR is like illegal. Like you cannot say to somebody, like, and I haven't read the article, so I'm only going on what it is that you've said, but you can't say to someone in the interview or whatever, you're not getting the job because you're
white. No, they didn't.
So what, because for me, in terms of that claim, like if it was the other way around and they said, you found out you didn't get it because you had a disability, or you didn't find out because you got it because you were black, like we would be incensed. Like
I'm going to jump in real quick. Yeah. I'm going to let you finish, but here's the thing, Sophie. Don't forget.
All right, Kanye, I'm going to let you finish.
How many of us don't get jobs just based on the fact that our names are ethnic?
And listen. We don't
have the proof. And even when we do have the proof and we try and say something about it, we're told, well, how do you know for sure? No, that wasn't. We're always like, I don't want to swear, but we're always BS. We get given some BS answer. So that stuff happens to us all the time. Do you know what I mean? So the fact that he had the audacity to push it that far, bruv, do you know how many jobs that I don't even know that I didn't get because of my surname? But if I had concrete proof and I went to try and sue, do you think my case is getting heard?
Please. I think
I'll let you finish.
If that's the case, then the HR person shouldn't have given him concrete proof. Like, because for me, the only way that we uphold the law is if we say that we're all accountable to the law. And that's the issue that we're having at the moment, in my opinion. When we're talking about Black Lives Matter, we're saying Black people are not given the same opportunities under the law. The law is there for a reason, and the whole point is justice is supposed to be blind. It isn't, but it's supposed to be. So we should all be treated the same, and that's the whole point of the Equalities Act, for your gender, for your race, for your marital status. You shouldn't be treated differently. So whatever was going on in that HR process, they need to fix that, because you can say in your job description that you're specifically looking for, or you would prefer to hire people of BAME categories, but then everyone should be having a fair access. And the point is, people don't. So I'm not saying that in terms of a sense of entitlement, that people shouldn't be like, you know, it's okay if someone who's not me or who isn't white gets the job. But you need to make sure that your HR process is firing on all cylinders. Because the fact that they were liable for that, then I'm just like, then your HR person messed up, because you should have done that better than them.
Right. But the thing is that the law right now does not recognize systematic racism on any level. if I'm doing a race with, like, say I'm racing a white woman and we're doing a 200 meter race and they let her run for 30 seconds and I'm being held back at the start line, and then they say, okay, Luanda, you can run now. That's not a fair race. It's not fair. So because there's all these barriers in place and all of these institutions that are not designed with us in mind, we're already been held back more than 30 seconds at the start line. So I don't think it's a bad thing for people to be thinking about trying to include a more diverse roster in your company. Like, that's not a bad thing. And I think, like I said, it really speaks to the fact that you're not used to being excluded for things. I think someone said something along the lines of, I think there was a woman, a white woman, who was speaking to a black man, and she said, I don't say the N-word, but what am I supposed to say to my friends who do? And he said, white people not being able to say the N-word is like the tiniest insight into what it's like being black, because we are so used to being excluded from everything, never being thought of, always being the afterthought and never the default. So people who can't, people who have never had that in their whole lives, and they're like, maybe don't say the N-word, even if you're singing along to your favorite Jay-Z song. They're like, what? There's a thing that I can't do? I'm so confused. My mind can't fathom the fact that I don't have access to everything. And yet we live our lives like this. And even when we try to open up these conversations, we're seen like as aggressive for being upset that we have all these accolades. Like when Boris Johnson was talking about Black Lives Matter, he was like, well, you know, black and brown students are going to university more. So I think the problem is it's going to be fit. And I'm like, you don't understand. Meritocracy is a lie. You can have all these degrees. You can work hard in school. You can do all of these things. The thing that is stopping you is systematic racism. The thing that is stopping you is your skin and your culture. So people need to make active decisions to start reversing the patterns that we're so comfortable living in. And it starts with things like that.
What I would say to that is, I don't have a problem with trying to equal the playing field. I don't have a problem with people actively going out and looking for more diverse people. For me, I'm saying you make sure that you follow the system properly. You write it into your system, write it into your policies that you're going to do it. You can't do this in an offhanded way, because things like libel suits are going to happen. For me, like, for example, there's a sixth form college in Newham, in East London, which is one of the poorest boroughs in the UK. Mm-hmm. And what they have done is they take some of the children and students and school students who are exceptional from various different races, but mostly diverse, and they give them the support that they need in order to apply to top universities. Last year, the Metro did a thing on A-level results day and said 41 of their children got accepted into Oxbridge, and the majority of them are Bay. My thing is, put the systems in place. By trying to say, I'm not going to give the job to the white man, that doesn't change it for the whole company. What you need to do is have a strategic system of how are we going to include people? Because it's not going to happen on the one here and the one there. It needs to be a systematic thing to change the racial pay gap. And it starts with not just doing things that are going to make you accountable under law.
Sophie, now I agree with you, but I think back to what Luanda was saying is, the people that are in charge of these systems aren't trying to have us win. So where are we going to magically, how are we magically, no, because Sophie, these systems, right, we have known about pay issues and discrimination for decades, right? And every so often they try and be like, yes, we're going to make sure we push diversity in this company. Oh, we're going to try and push diversity in the police force. Oh, we're going to try. But all this BS is still happening. So how are we magically going to change this? No, but it's out of my mind. These systems are supposed to be already there, but nothing's being done. So I think
what exactly are you saying then? Are you saying that, so what is the alternative from trying to rework the systems?
I'm saying that positive discrimination works.
But positive discrimination is a system. When we put that on the CV form for, like, we're looking for specific people from BAME, that is a system that has been put in place to try and do it. What I'm saying is we need to try and update, like, for example, in terms of closing the racial pay gap, we need to start thinking, they said, there is a certain ceiling that people of black and brown ethnicity get to. Then we need to start looking. If that's the ceiling, we need to start giving them special training in order, so once they get that ceiling, all the support mechanisms that they need to get there. Because I don't think it's everybody, but I'm saying it has to be a concerted effort to put systems. There is no other way we can do it without systems. If it's not, we're just hoping and praying.
No, but what I'm saying is, who's going to be running these systems? And how do we know their agendas? Because we've already been told this, Sophie. We've been told this so many... Look at when they tried to diversify the police force. They made a big push for it, but yet we're still having situations like Mark Duggan occur. Do you understand?
So what's the alternative?
There is... The thing is, unfortunately, there is no alternative. That's why I think that positive discrimination should work. I don't actually know the exact ins and outs of the case that Luanda mentioned. I don't know why he was deemed liable. For all we know, it could be the judge. The judge could just be someone who's just as entitled as him. But here's the thing, we're shaking our heads, but it's the truth. This is. We don't know. Do you understand? I can't tell you that it was a black judge that judged that case. I can't tell you what the jury looked like if the jury were black or white. I can't tell you who the prosecuting officer... Like, I can't tell you none of that. For all that, this system, it runs so integral to people. The system is made out of people. So, unfortunately, I think, honestly, positive discrimination is the only way to... I don't know!
Can I just jump in? Maybe I'll cool the fires a little. I think in regards to closing this pay gap and increasing the household incomes of like BAME people or black and brown people, because I hate that word. But I think we're going to start to do it. I think mainly, this is my point, okay? In the last 20 years, the reason why I think there hasn't been much of a move is because it was still a lot of the older generation that was still in employment. And what I mean by that is either when they came from their country or have been here, they were pushed into kind of low-skilled work and low income, and they weren't given the opportunity to get promotions, or they weren't educated to that level to do that job. And we now see that black and brown people are getting educated more, whether we're getting the jobs to match our education levels, a whole different conversation. But I think our generation's going to start to make a bit of a shift because we're being educated more, we're a bit more entrepreneurial. So we're creating our own kind of incomes. And I know we always talk about like black and brown people, you know, they only kind of make money in sports and entertainment, but we're seeing a new wave of like digital content or podcasters and business people, and they're creating their own kind of financial income. And we are like, I don't know for you guys, but compared to my older brothers and their sisters, when they were growing up, like, they didn't have lots of friends that had lots of money from doing things like producing on a podcast or different things like that, because none of that existed. Their friends either could make money by working in an office 9 to 5. And now we're seeing a more unconventional way of working and people reaping the benefits of that. And I don't know if that's because they get to be their own boss, so there's no person of another color kind of discriminating them, not giving them promotions and all that kind of thing. But I think the pay gap is going, I think within the next 10 to 20 years, we're going to see the pay gap kind of decrease a little bit, because we're just in a bit more control. That's just my argument. I think we're a bit more in control than our parents were. Not to shame them, but they didn't. You know what I mean? Not to shame them, they didn't reach high enough, but for some of them, they couldn't reach high enough, you know? I think we're going to make the difference. That's what I think.
I like that.
I agree. And I do think that in the next 20 years, we will see a change, because as Anissa said, we are finding avenues of business from black-owned makeup to black-owned clothing, workout clothing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, we are diversifying.
Everything.
And I think in a way, that's our system, you know? The fact that we are now, I don't know, I don't want to say woke, because that's not the word I mean, but because of the internet, and because of, you know,
technology,
we are now waking up to the fact that, you know what, we have more power than our parents' generation may have had. We have more access than our parents' generation may have had.
Yeah.
We can be writers, and we can still be in the police force. We can own our own businesses and start our own bits and pieces. Mm. So I do think the next 20 years will be very interesting to see how the racial pay gap does change.
Extremely interesting.
Just to keep quiet, because I feel like I disagreed a lot on that one.
But really?
I did disagree a lot.
I'm not you, Sophie. Can you explain why you disagree? Is there like a one point, or is it like a five pointer?
Do you know? I guess for me, I think that starting our own and doing our own thing is one thing, but I think that it's going to take a I think 20 years is personally a good time scale to think about when are we next looking about this, because it's not something that's going to be happening very shortly or very quickly. Like, it's going to take an idea of like looking at, you know, where we're hiring from. Someone was talking about in savepeople.com, it did this article and said maybe automated CV systems, so that the computer will look at choice words that it needs in order to hire someone, so it's not somebody who has a bias, because some bias is unconscious. Some people are overtly racist. Some people don't even know, because there's also an assumption that if you're Chinese or you're Indian, a lot of the time that you're more intelligent. Again, it's a stereotype, but they might have more access to jobs because that inbuilt stereotype is there. So I think it's going to take a lot of down of building stereotypes, building systems, doing our own thing. But that's why I love you ladies, because I can disagree with you and we can still get on. So, I know, so we've talked about the racial pay gap, and I also want to look at now race, but in the media sense, especially when it comes to women. Now, do you guys know Alexandra Burke?
Yes.
Hallelujah.
Sing it, girl.
She won the X Factor in 2018 when she sang with Beyonce and did that phenomenal performance of Listen. But I don't know if you know, a couple of days ago, she came out with an IG video where she talked about the race that she has encountered in the music industry, in the media industry. So she said when she was on Strictly Come Dancing, she was painted as a diva when all she had was an injury. She says that when she won the X Factor, they asked her to bleach her skin. They asked her to... not have their hair in braids or not to have an afro, because you need to, white people need to be comfortable with you, so you can't do that anymore. And they said to her, you know, you need to smile more on your Instagram because you're looking aggressive. So this is, she's not the only black woman who's experienced this. Other black women have come forward in the past few weeks saying that they have experienced the same thing in the media industry. So I guess my question is, why do we think there is such a problematic portrayal of black women in the media and beyond? Guys, you guys are just upset about what I'm saying. So
I'm upset, bro.
I didn't realise it to that extent.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Do you know what? Right. What I'm going to say now is probably going to sound like verbal diarrhea, right? But as I just sit and think, what is... the problem, like, the only thing it can be down to is an inferiority complex and fear. Because if you're actively telling someone to not be who they are so that someone else can feel comfortable, and this person doesn't have four eyes, and, you know, and, no, but you know what I mean? This person isn't a dragon, but yet you're saying that how they naturally look will make somebody else uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. The only reason why that person will be uncomfortable is because they have some kind of inferiority complex. Because for me, when I see a white woman that has blonde hair and blue eyes, I don't feel, do you know what, babes? I beg you, curl that hair for me, yeah? I beg you, put some brown contacts on so I can feel more comfortable. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like that. I know, but it's the truth. I see a ginger person, I'm like, hey, I beg you, dye that hair real quick. I don't feel them things. So it has to be an inferiority complex. And it's just about the people who unfortunately have had the power and just want to continually see themselves elevated. So when it comes to anyone else, they're not happy with seeing someone else celebrate the way they are. That's the only thing I can put it down to.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think it's really upsetting because black women, and specifically obviously talking about black women in media, but in general, to be honest, like, we are expected to have this happy to be here attitude. If you have self-belief, people are going to make you out like you think that you're better than them. But it's only because those people already subconsciously believe that you were beneath them to begin with. You're allowed to be intelligent, but if you seem like you're smarter than your white counterparts, that intelligence then becomes threatening. You know, like, you are allowed to be talented, but you cannot be center stage. When the Misha B thing happened, with them trying to paint her out to be a bully, I really feel like, this is so upsetting for me. But okay, sorry, someone else go, because I'm upset.
No, you know what? I'm not going to lie. I feel how you feel right now. Sophie, please go ahead too.
I'll tell the story a bit, my love, and then you come back in, okay? So Misha B was also on the X Factor. She was on the show when Little Mix won. And there was this thing where she was set upon, the video was still on YouTube, by Talisa and Louis, where they spoke to her and were just like, you know, we feel like you're overconfident. Or, you know, we've heard that, you know, you're making comments, you know, you need to be a bit nicer, because we've heard that you're quite mean to the other girls, so you need to work on that. And she came out with a video, I think this week, saying that this was all kind of drummed up. She was like, I never said that. The producers were kind of saying things to different people so that this narrative could be, she said, I felt like a narrative was being made that I'm the mean, aggressive, angry black woman, which is something that we've all heard. And Luanda, it is, it's really upsetting.
Very emotional.
To see our sisters, to see our friends, to be reduced to a very few attributes. You're angry, you're bossy, you're strict. I'm just like, we're so much more than that, and we're not even that most of the time. So where does that even come from?
You know what, I'm gonna lighten the mood real quick, right? This is one of the reasons why I love Beyonce so much.
what did B do? Tell us, Linda.
You know what, it's not even what she did, it's just who she is. And I think you know, from the days of Destiny's Child, now I know there's been controversies about her skin being lightened and her facial features and the questions of, you know, why isn't Kelly as celebrated as Beyonce? But the one thing I will say of Beyonce is that she's always been unapologetically a black woman, regardless of what kind of music she's making, which award show she's at. She's always been unapologetically black. And that's why I just love her and her ethic. And I think, you know, the more of us that are able to get into positions where we are celebrated for all that we are, because we've all seen when Beyonce was Sasha Fierce, but no one was feeling intimidated then. Everyone was celebrating that, you know, diva-ness that she has. So when I see her, it makes me smile. It's honestly so sad to know that we are fighting so many battles as black women. And it's just,
sorry, not to cut you off, Linda, but I think Beyonce almost has a bit of a luxury of that, because she gets to have more control over her narrative. So she gets to paint the picture of herself and for us to receive. Whereas people like Misha or Alexandra, they're fitting into somebody else's story and narrative. So they're going to package them whatever way they want to.
Yeah.
And not to bring it all the way back, but unfortunately, us as black people, black women, black men, unfortunately, to the Western world, we have always been seen as a commodity, something to sell, something to package, something to put together. And that started in slavery. And so where the ripple effect has now gone, where we have more white or Western people controlling the media, they are still looking at us as a commodity. So it's not, oh, you can't be your real self. It's, we now have characters and we want you to fit into this character. So you are either the diva, the sassy, the bully, or you're the best friend who gives
advice.
Or you are this completely over-sexualized, fetishized black woman, okay? Oh, you're exotic and all that kind of stuff. They have narratives that they want us to fit. They kind of size us up in whatever narrative they have and say, oh, you fit that one, so that's who you're going to be. And it's very unfortunate, because I think sometimes there's a luxury to control our narrative, and I think that the media does a really good job at putting us in characters. I see Sophie have something to say.
I didn't want to jump in, because
no, go.
I over agree with you. I think one thing I'll say about Beyonce, then I'll move on to the second point you made, is that Beyonce hasn't always had control over her narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
When she first started, she very much had to kind of fit in with the mold. And she says herself, you know, when she decided to start her kind of like her own production company and things like that, that's when she had to step into now creating her own narrative. Because when Formation came out, there were a lot of people that fell by the wayside because she stepped into her blackness completely. Yes. She was like, with my
microphone, Sophie. She brought the brakes back. It was
exactly. She was just kind of like, I'm stepping into this, and now that I have enough money and power, I can say what I want to say. And it's really difficult when you're someone like Misha B or, you know, Alexandra Burke, who don't get to that level of power and influence, that you still have to very much listen to people saying foolishness in your ear. And in terms of what you're saying about the character types, I actually did a bit of research on that. There was a woman called Tamara Winfrey Harris, and she wrote a book called The Sisters Are All Right, Changing the Broken Narrative of Black Women in America. And she talked about these archetypes, which is the mammy, which is, you know, in Gone with the Wind, The person, all I need to do is serve. I don't care about myself. All I'm going to do is give, 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 give. We see black women being put in that. They talked about the sapphire, which was the idea of the black woman who's in the field and she's just as strong as the men and she emasculates men and she's bossy and she's over-domineering. We see that all the time. And the last one was the Jezebel, which is like the black woman just loves, love, love sex. And they said the Jezebel came in so that it was kind of okay to rape women during slavery, because like, well, they're over sexual, you know, they're so sexual, like they kind of have it coming to them. And we now see that they're trying to fit black women to all three of these molds, and most of the time it's the angry black woman, most of the time it's the sapphire, like strong, she just wants to, like, when you hear men say, oh, they're so strong, they don't want me to be a man, I'm just like, don't fall into the narrative. And that's why representation in the media is so important. That's why having someone like Lizzo, who's like, yeah, I'm fat and what? When you have people like Viola Davis in How to Get Away with Murder, and she's dark-skinned, and she's not conventionally looking, and she's educated, and she's messy, and she's sexy, you have to see we are not three different things. We are a million different things. And 100%. That's because
I agree with you, Sophie. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think that every black woman is aware of these characters that they want us to play. And the thing is, when you know who you are, when you're strong in who you are, when you have self-worth, challenges the status quo. And people do not like that. People find that intimidating. When you are, you can be who you are with your natural hair, with your dark skin, and you love who you are. And not only that, you're going to be like opinionated on top of it and stand up for yourself. Yeah. People will lose their minds. Yeah. And that's why the Misha B situation was so like upsetting for me to learn about, because this is something that I feel like I've dealt with my whole life, you know? And I feel like...
You're going to make it through, girl. It's okay. You're going to make it through. Take a breath. Go on. We want to hear it. We need to hear it. Go on.
Sure. It's okay.
I feel like it doesn't matter who you are and how you behave.
Go on, Queen. You got this, man.
Let me get emotional.
This is air hug. This is air hug right now.
This is happening in real time, guys. It's happening in real time. Go on, girl. You got it.
Because white voices are treated with a credibility that black voices do not have. So it doesn't matter how you treat people and how you are in your life. They can say whatever they want. And people are going to believe that story about you. Mm-hmm. And it does, if you try to fight it, you become hysterical and you become angry instead of being human.
Yes.
And it happens to me all the time.
Luanda, just know that your voice is appreciated. And your voice is cherished.
Yes. Yes.
We need you. This society, this program, this world, we need you. Without voices like yours, this BS will continue happening. So don't ever silence yourself, because it's not you, it's them. So keep being you. And God, when am I going to see the Afro again?
That's why space is like necessary. I know that's why we're all so grateful to be able to have this platform to show just how varied we all are. Like you said, society would say we're all women who are black or have black in us, therefore we're all pretty much the same. I'm like, no, we vary, we have different opinions, we don't agree with each other, and we're just like, people try to dehumanize us
all the time
and act like, you know, we don't have the same range of feelings and opportunities and everything, but we do. And I'm just so grateful to have you girls on here.
100%.
People can see just how diverse we are.
100%. And Luanda, I honestly empathize with you so much, because I'm just not even thinking about media, but I'm just thinking about when I've been in previous workplaces, and if people have thought that I am overconfident because I don't feel like, just as a random example, but you know, we used to watch Love Island in our breaks at lunch. Yes. And lots of the women would sit there and be like, oh my gosh, I wish I looked like her, I wish I had a body, I wish I had her hair, blah blah blah. And I'm sitting there like, I don't wish a damn thing, I like the way that I look. And it would upset people that I liked the way that I looked, and I wasn't saying, oh my God, I need to lose this weight. Oh my God, I need to lose. Because I wouldn't talk down about myself, it upset people. And people were like, oh, well, you really believe in yourself, don't you? Oh,
yes, I do.
Yes, I can believe in myself.
Yes, Jill on your ponytail, I do believe in myself.
It's like, why do you want me to be insecure? But it's this idea of, if how dare you even think that you're okay when we don't even think we're okay? And it's kind of like, no, I'm sorry, I don't need to feel like that.
Yeah.
And people have made me feel less than all the time just because I don't feel insecure, maybe because I feel confident, maybe because I want to take chances, because I'm just being myself. People have always seen that as a threat and have always comment about it at work. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't get the relevance. I don't comment on behavior. You know,
it happens to women so much. Like, it happens to all women, because you only profit off of women when you can sell us things because of our insecurities. So if we're happy with our weight, then you can sell us a diet. If we're not happy sell us makeup. If you're not happy with our hair, you can sell us a wig. Like, you can sell us anything based on our insecurities. But then when you add in the idea of blackness, when we are not the stereotype of good looking or beautiful, we are generally, we seem to have a little bit more weight, our features are broader, our hair is curlier, it's big. And then you have this second layer that they try to say curvaceous. Yes, girl. They try to say that we're not enough, but we are enough. Just the fact that we are here and we are born, we are enough. Like, that's all it takes to be a human being, means that you are enough. And we have to really remind ourselves of this when the world doesn't, because sometimes its voice is so loud.
And this is why I feel like it's so important for me to be so strong in my spirituality, because I, like, no matter how many times this happens to me, and it happens, like I said, all the time, continuously throughout my whole life, and I just have new, fresh experiences with different people doing the same things to me in whatever environment I'm in. And it's always baffling to me to see how wounded people are just from me existing and, like, loving myself and loving who I am and being confident and being outspoken and wearing my hair natural. People are confused, like, why aren't you straightening your hair? Why aren't you doing this? Like, that's why when you said the thing about X Factor saying to Alexandra Burke, oh, you need to have lighter skin, like, you don't understand how damaging these things are psychologically to every person who doesn't fit the 10 out of 10, whatever you want to be. You know what I mean? What you in your mind think is a beautiful person, or what you in your mind think is a strong man or a successful person. And when you meet people who not only aren't that idea in your mind, but only not only aren't that, but then also believe in themselves regardless, people react so negatively to you. But regardless of how many times at me, I'm not going to change the way that I am. No. I'm never going to dim my shine for someone. Ever, no matter how painful the situation is for me, I'm always going to be who I am. I'm always going to speak my truth, and I'm always going to exist in my dark skin, in my curve, regardless of whatever you think of it.
We love you, girl.
Well, thank you so much, Luanda, for even sharing that. Honestly, it was such a personal testimony. I think it moved all of us. And thanks to all the lovely ladies for sharing your great stories. I want to thank everybody for listening to Ethnically Speaking. We have loved every single minute of today's episode. And if you have too, please make sure you don't forget to give us a thumbs up. Let's keep the conversation going. If you, as an ethnic woman, how have you been portrayed, or how have you been perceived at work? Let us know in the comments below. And for a summary of all we've discussed today, head over to our website, unitedmelaningroup.com/ES002. The link is in the description. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe, like, comment, hit that notification bell so you do not miss a thing. Thank you so much for watching. We'll be back here same time next week. Stay safe and stay at home. Thank you.